Yeah, thanks. God's playing the drums. Get a job.
Welcome to Scape Chats episode 14. I'm Alan and I'm here with Magellan. This week we're going to be discussing season 2 episode 3 of Farscape, Taking the Stone, and season 2 episode 4, Crackers Don't Matter. First up is Taking the Stone, which was directed by Rowan Woods and written by Justin Monjo, originally airing March 31st, 2000. Magellan, I thought this episode was cray cray.
You did, huh?
I did. Also, hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you doing?
So good.
So good. I also thought it was a bit cray cray. But honestly, when stacked up against the second episode we watched, it's kind of hard to give anything that descriptor.
Yeah, they're both really heavy episodes, but I feel like we're leaning towards a Farscape that is more experimental than it's been so far. Mm-hmm. And I can appreciate that in a big way.
I definitely thought I was going insane.
Yes.
For sure. While I was watching both of these episodes. It's by far the trippiest double feature that we've done, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
You want to lead us through the plot of Taking the Stone a little bit? Because when I watched it, I was a little bit lost in exactly what the logic of the episode was. And so I asked you to watch it closely so that you could explain it to me.
Which I did. And I think, just to start things off, a lot of the reason that this episode felt really weird is because Justin Monjo, who's directed some of the weirder episodes of the show. And Rowan Woods has directed some of them also. Mm-hmm. The way I described it in my notes is that he writes episodes assuming that you are in it from the get-go and that you don't need any time to have something like laid out for you.
Yeah.
Which is a type of script writing that I really appreciate. The problem is that with a show that's so sci-fi heavy like this, when all of the characters feel like they're very competent and understanding of why they're doing things and you don't, it creates this weird dissonance of like, why are we scared right now? You sort of like fall out of the episode, which happened at the beginning of Taking the Stone. But once I got it, I thought it was a pretty rewarding episode to watch. So Chiana starts off the episode pretty sad. This is an episode about her after all, so it's appropriate that they start around with her. And she's walking around really just in a lot of pain. And she goes and she's like, hey, Crichton, I have some stuff to talk about. And he immediately assumes the role of late 30s dad. And he's essentially just like, oh, go ask your mother. I'm playing with my tools. Because excuse the thunderstorm outside. I don't think that's picking up, but it's loud over here. Hey, cool it. Thanks.
Sorry.
Yeah, thanks. God's playing the drums. Get a job. Sorry. Yeah, so he's trying to fix some things, and he's like, oh, I don't really, whatever, I'm not in the mood to talk right now. I'm busy. And she's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just be sad somewhere else. And like anyone else who's really sad, she goes to a room and she cuts her stomach open.
Right, yeah.
And out pops a delicious red lollipop. I actually wrote that she pulled out a red yo-yo.
I was trying to figure out what it looked like, and it does look like a yo-yo. You're right.
Yes.
I was more bothered by the fact that she didn't bleed at all.
Is she not at all?
No, not really. Later on, the other characters mentioned, like, we found this in a room covered in Chiana's blood. That was Dargo talking. I don't know if Dargo said
it. I thought that was Zahn, actually.
Yeah, that's my Zahn impression. Rude. So the other characters mentioned that she was bleeding, but in that scene, it's a very clean cut, and she digs like straight into her insides and pulls this thing out, and there's no blood. But
it's like the least violent way of cutting into your own stomach. It's just one clean cut, pull the thing out, and then there's no blood. Like, it's very sanitized, really.
Yeah, so that was a little weird, because, like, this device, can we talk about what it does, what the point is of it?
Yes.
So the idea behind this device, which they explain after we come back from the opening credits, is that you can get it, does it have a name? I don't remember if it does or not. Like, it's like a life ring or something stupid like that.
It's got the word life in it, for sure.
Yeah.
Life disc, maybe?
Life disc, that's right. And so
yeah, that's actually correct. Yeah.
Idea behind a life disc is that you can get one linked to another person, and when it turns off, you know that they died.
The other person that you're connected to is dead, right. Yes.
I wonder why you would have that inside of yourself like that.
I got the implication that it was something that you either do because you want to keep like tabs on your family, like, oh, we're on opposite sides of the universe and we want to know how we're doing.
seems a little strange, or it's one of those put into your stomach when you're young and you're linked with someone sort of like by fate, because a lot of this episode is about like accepting.
I wasn't necessarily questioning the logic of having one at all, but just the idea of like, if the point of it is to keep you notified if somebody dies, then how are you going to know when it happens if you have to like cut your guts open to check?
I think what's happening is the reason she's in pain and when she goes to Crichton and she's sad is because she feels it stopped working.
Okay, sure.
And then she's like, I got to cut it to check on it. And then she checks on it and there's no light. And she's like, well, my partner's dead.
All right. Well, yeah, I thought it was a cool idea and definitely a nice way to get us into an episode and like give us this setup of her brother died without ever having to introduce a brother character. But I just thought it was a little weird that she had to like cut her stomach open to see it. But yeah.
Right. It just seems like an odd dramatic device. Like, why not put it around your wrist or something? Or there's other ways to do that.
Anyway.
But point is, it turns out that it's her brother, which you find out a little later. And so she leaves Moya. She says, screw you guys, I'm out of here. She takes Aaron's prowler and leaves. Aaron finds out and gets really mad. And so, Zahn and Dargo find the disc and they say, oh, there's Chiana's blood on it. This must be the situation. And so we get we were talking about this last week, the weirdest trio of people to go investigate an issue, which is Aaron, Crichton, and Rigel.
Right. Like, why would they bring Rigel at all?
And that's the thing that bummed me out was when we started this episode, I was like, ooh, we're going to get some, like, Rigel doing some investigative stuff. And he leaves after, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah. That would have been really interesting to see him involved in the A-plot of this episode, dealing with the sort of themes of suicide. Like, what would Rigel have to say about that? But instead, they just sent him back to the ship to have just a dumb subplot. Like a really dumb subplot to himself.
And it's also a bummer because I was over the moon with how great he was in the second episode.
Yeah.
Which, when he got the opportunity to be weird with everyone else. But in this episode, he just kind of, it felt like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. Before we leave the, what do you call it? A cold open? Is that? Okay.
Yeah, that's what I call it.
Before we leave the cold open, I just had a couple other things I wanted to bring up. She smashes a DRD, which isn't important, but I feel like we don't talk enough about the DRDs.
I love them. They're so cute.
They're cute little dudes. Are they, like, sentient? Or what's their deal?
Well, remember the episode where they find out that Moya's pregnant and they talk to her via one of them?
Right.
I think they're just, like, it's the equivalent of, like, her having feelers that she uses to go around her body and explore
herself. So are they controlled by Moya?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Okay. Because I know interface with them and tell them to go places, but I wasn't sure if they were directly linked to Moya or not.
That's because whenever something weird goes on the ship, one of the first ways that they usually determine something weird is like, oh, the DRDs are acting up. So I think there is a direct correlation between, Moya's state of mind and their state of functioning. So I think she controls them.
All right. I was shocked by the fact that she smashed one, and then I had to think about it because I wasn't sure if that actually was a bad thing or not. If it's like smashing a lamp or if it's like smashing a dog.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, I think it's smashing lamp because they also seem infinitely replenishable.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is, I guess, makes sense if they're organic the way that Moya is. Rigel called Earth Erp.
Yep.
I forget what Crichton was telling him. I watched this episode last night and I already forget what Crichton was saying to him, but he's like, yeah, we're from Earth. And he's like, oh, Erp. And you're like, first of all, okay. This is just a weird series of misunderstandings, and there's some good translator microbe stuff that I'm excited to hear about from you.
Yeah, thank you.
In these episodes.
That was that moment was actually my translator microbe moment of the episode, was the herb thing. Because here's a question. How do the microbes deal with mispronunciations?
Hmm. You asked this before. Though.
Have I asked this before?
Something like this.
In what episode?
I don't remember.
Have you been paying attention?
No, I don't even. I don't. It's not like I edit.
Right. Because what if you even mispronounce a word normally? Like, you know how you can say, like, oh, man, I really enjoyed that hot dog. But then you could say, I really enjoyed that hot dog.
Yeah, because then you're getting into accents.
Well, you're getting into accents. But let's say I say hot dog instead of hot dog. How does it translate that?
I think that Rigel didn't even know what he... I think he didn't even hear that word.
This is different. that is him saying a word from another language that he would hear as Earth because he doesn't have a word for it, and he's misremembering it. That's fine. That's like you're mispronouncing a word from another language here on Earth that you didn't know. Like, instead of saying c'est la vie, you say, like,
c'est la vie?
Or, like, c'est la vie or something.
Yeah.
And that's just bad French. But I'm saying, like, let's say you're speaking in English, and you have translator microbes, and they have translator microbes, and you say, I really enjoyed that salmon, and they would know what salmon is, but they wouldn't know what salmon is. Anyway, it's not a worthwhile question. But
yeah, it's a difficult question. I guess I'll keep that in mind
when I think about stuff like this. I loved the concept of a royal cemetery planet.
Yeah, dude. Again, meanwhile, on a Metallica album cover.
Right.
I'm starting to really be into that, like, establishing shot where it hints at so much about the world. And the idea that this planet is just, like, a leftover, it's like a garbage planet. But it's, like a, you know, it's a cemetery planet. It's a place where we just leave the dead. And specifically a royal cemetery planet.
Right.
And so there's just a bunch of teens that stay here and do drugs all the time, which is what people do in cemeteries. So, like, it kind of works in terms of my easy Earth metaphors.
Yeah.
And so Rigel and Aaron and John land. And right away, Rigel gets taken care of because he finds a stash of jewels.
Just right there on the ground. Like, he doesn't even move. He just picks up something, and it opens up, and there's a treasure.
And then his eyes go wide, and he goes, Yahtzee.
Right. Yahtzee.
I don't know why he says Yahtzee. That's just a weird line. I guess it's like, oh, Eureka, in his language.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, because Yutz is shit, right?
Sure, correct.
So I thought maybe it had to do with Yutz.
Sure. Oh, maybe. Like, oh, shit. Like, yeah. But then this episode gets really weird from there. And Crane and Aaron discover that Shiana has gone native and has interned herself.
She's joined a reggae cult.
Essentially. And they've dyed her hair. Disgusting.
Yep.
Disgusting. It looks like they just matted it down with red paint and grease.
She just took, like, a tomato bath. Or something.
And then, like, rubbed her fingers through it and tried to, like, make it stand up. But yeah, mm-hmm. That's basically it. Which is weird, because I was saying to you,
it looks like she stepped out of the shower mid-shampooing.
Oh, that's good. And she had, like, red hair dye. That's actually that's a perfect version of it. But what I thought was funny was, like, Crichton's early 2000s spiky hair is getting, like, larger and larger every week. And so I was saying, like, oh, maybe either he was inspired by this or she was inspired by him to do that. But with that, I harp on that a little bit. It's just, if you go back and watch old episodes again, or watch, like, clips from old episodes, it's so weird, the evolution of John Crichton's hair. I don't know why.
It just looks out of place here.
Exactly. And it feels like it's like a 30-year-old with a 17-year-old's hairstyle.
Yeah, because he's supposed to be clean-cut, all-American astronaut guy.
Yes.
And that kind of character just doesn't make sense having hair like that.
Exactly. So this weird character goes to Chiana and finds out that she's part of this group that does some weird stuff. They do a lot of drugs, specifically space mushrooms. I'm trying to see what exactly happens first, if there's anything.
They have her in that rig where it's like...
Oh, the sonic thing.
Two cartoon weights. And she's... Yeah, there's some sonic stuff going on between them. It's like when Spider-Man 3... When he catches the symbiote in between those rods.
Yep.
Yep. Thanks. I saw that movie.
Or The Amazing Spider-Man 2, when he catches Electro between the whole power plant, and then it, like, resonates and, like, it makes a cool dubstep noise.
Right, or, like, that one Spider-Man video game I had on the PC, where you're fighting Carnage, and you do sound stuff, too, so.
My eyes rolled into the back of my head during that video. So I'm coming back. It's basically just a series of, like, oh, Chiana's doing weird stuff, so, like, here it's... It looks like she's being tortured, but they find out that she willingly chose to try and stay in this sonic disturbance machine for as long as possible, and she's doing really well. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, and they have all these other weird things.
Nobody stayed in there for over 20 microts, blah, blah, blah. The word microts, I'm hating it more and more every time they say it. I don't know why, it just bothers me.
They're so comfortable with it. There is a scene later, I think way later in this episode, maybe, where I was just, like, laughing at the fact that Crichton is so bought into their time things now. I'll get to the line as I continue, continue going along. But yeah, I love that stuff.
It's just that this scene was a great juxtaposition of the two words that have the biggest effect on me, the two Farscape slang words, the one that I hate the most, which is Mycrots, and the one that I like the most, which is Frel.
Yeah.
I really enjoy Frel.
And the way they use it. They kind of, they'll sometimes, they use it exactly the way you would use fuck, which is they mumble it, they scream it, they use it with what the. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they mix it up a lot, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Before we get to the main thing of this episode, I also want to just say that they meet the main kind of guy of this group, and his name is, well, here's the thing.
What is it?
It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
So, I don't know if he was ever named. He probably was.
There was a lot of names in this episode. The thing is, there's also a lot of mumbling, so... Oh, I think his name's Neri. Nope, that's a dead guy. Oh, that's her brother, actually. That's Shauna's brother. Yeah. Neri. Whatever, the main guy, who's like kind of the villain of this episode, is introduced, and he's like, oh, you guys gotta let her do the stuff with the thing. He's very Australian, and he looks like Christian Kane, who played Lindsay on the television show Angel. So put that image in your head, and then try and rewind and see that. I'll pause. Yeah, so I was saying that the main guy kind of looks like Lindsay from Angel, except with shorter hair, and all of them are orange, too.
Yeah, well, in the sense that he's just kind of like a shitty tan guy.
Exactly.
With really pretty tan eyes.
Exactly. God, I love Christian Kane. He's a great actor.
Good man.
And, okay, so then he introduces the sort of main plot device of this episode, which is the titular taking of the stone. Taking the stone.
Right.
Which is a ritual that these people do for, I guess, religious reasons, but also just spiritual, so, like, it makes us...
Yeah, this is the part that was confusing for me. I didn't understand the logic behind taking the stone, because I guess I wasn't paying attention when they first explained it. So I thought that there was, like, a stone or something, and there was, like, a reason that they wanted to get to the bottom of that thing, that chasm.
Oh, I see.
And I thought that there was maybe some sort of, like, this thing happened every once in a while for a certain reason. And then they also talk about the gathering. Is that, they mention a gathering or something like that?
Yeah, the gathering is when they all do it together. That's the ceremony that surrounds it.
Right. But then it seemed like they just kind of did it every day, too.
Well, what's frustrating about this, and the reason that it's confusing to you, is because it's a thing that is a weird, like, it, at first it's like, oh, this is a weird spiritual thing that they choose to do, and that's fine, and whatever. And so when they're doing that, and John Crichton says, this is a bad thing, you shouldn't do it, it kind of makes John Crichton seem like an asshole.
Right.
Where he's like, don't do your spiritual practice, because it's terrible.
We've talked about before, where he's kind of the very sort of Western, what's the word I'm looking for? He's just sort of, he's the white guy, and he's kind of like, hey, this is different than the way I do stuff, so it's got to be wrong.
Just because it might kill you doesn't mean that, yeah, he's just kind of immediately against it. He says, no one should do it, you're all bad. But as it unravels, we learn that it's not exactly a good thing to be doing. Essentially, taking the stone, for people who don't know or people who want explanation, is this ritual where you stand on these things called piers, which are just rocks overlooking a big cliff, like a spherical, like cylindrical pit. And everyone does this thing where they raise their hands up above their head and they go, oh, or something. And they, like, it's a cool pose that they all take. It looks very cat-like. And one person at a time, or several people, jumps off the cliff. And so it's supposed to be, like, a ritual suicide thing. But
that's what I thought it was at first, is it was ritual suicide.
Yes. So I want to understand this part exactly. The way I kind of got it was, if the person's like, I'm going to take the stone, I'm ready for it, I'm 100% into it, they jump off and they die. And so it's just, well, I did it. I sacrificed myself to the spirit of death or something. If they either don't want to, or if they, like, every once in a while, it just kind of happens based on, like, luck, then sometimes all of the chanting that's happening, this is some weird sci-fi stuff, forms a sonic resonance called a sonic net, which is, like, a sound that's so, like, you know, resonant that right before they hit the ground, it forms, like, a bounce, which, like, slows their fall, and then they can hit the ground without dying. And so that's what's happening. But what I never understood was when the sonic net happens, or whether or not it's voluntary or involuntary. I think the implication is that it happens occasionally, and this is supposed to be, like, a daredevil thing where you're supposed to have faith that it's going to work, and sometimes it doesn't. Because that's how the ending makes sense to me.
Right. So that is how I more or less got it. I am reading the page on the Farscape Encyclopedia Project about the Taking the Stone ceremony, and I think that that's right. Basically, there's a sonic net that you can activate with, like, your sonic stuff, however that works, if you choose to do so. or you can choose to not activate it and die instead. But it's also possible that you can do the net thing wrong and die, which I think yes. is all basically what you just said, right?
And pretty much all of those things happen. They show a couple of people with the net, then they show someone dying, and then that's like, all right, we've now established that everything can happen. So now Chiana wants to do it. And they're like, wait, no. And then they're like, okay, we'll think about it. And she kind of leaves and talks to them for a while. Mm-hmm. And at one point they meet like a pregnant girl who has like a weird like spherical glass orb for a stomach.
Yeah, she's carrying Mysterio's baby.
Is Mysterio the... Is that Chiana's brother?
Or no, Mysterio.
Mysterio. Oh, is that the main guy?
No, he's a Spider-Man villain with a fishbowl head.
Okay. I thought... Yeah. That's actually true. That's canon. That's headcanon.
Yeah.
She has a baby, and she... I don't know what the point of her was. She's just kind of the exposition.
Yeah, I didn't either. She... Her, like, boyfriend just jumped off and died.
Yeah.
In this first...
When we and they're see, like, aren't you super bummed out? And she's like, it's fine. He was going to go.
Yeah, when we see Taking the Stone for the first time, a group of people jump off and they survive. You're supposed to think at first that they're going to die and then they survive. And it's like, whoa, that's cool. And then this guy jumps off and it's like, oh, is he going to survive too? And then, no, he died. And I was never really clear on if he fucked up or if he did it on purpose. I think we eventually find out he died on purpose, right?
Right. There are some people that die on purpose, correct.
Anyway, and so she's like, well, he died, it happens, everybody dies. And then there's also a scene where she's, like, drinking and pregnant at the same time, and it upsets John Crichton a lot. But then I think she's gone after that.
I think there might be one more scene with her at the very end where they're like, you guys gotta stop doing this, because we found out that it's not, like, a smart thing to do, and it's bad. And she's like, no, it's good, like, it's fine. She's around a lot for them to just kind of, to tell them that things are going fine, even though they're not.
Oh, yeah.
Moving right along, I said that this episode felt very Mad Max-esque in terms of a crazy society of homicidal people.
Yeah.
You should watch Mad Max Fury Road.
Is that the one that. Where it's like, what's the movie where it's like, Warriors?
That's The Warriors.
That's the vibe I got when we first saw these dudes on the planet when Chiana first goes down. It was like, oh, it's a weird, like Mad Gang Max thing. Or like post-apocalyptic Warriors kind of thing.
Well, The Warriors is only... Okay. You and I need to watch The Warriors together at some point.
Okay. I haven't seen it.
Because I adore that movie, and I kind of want to watch it with someone who hasn't seen it, because if I were just like, you should watch it, then probably a lot of its weirdness would go over your head.
Okay.
But that's neither here nor there. What is here is that I was just saying this is very Mad Max, because there's a culture, there's like a group of people in the Fury Road that like worship the idea of... they worship chrome and chrome wheels. So they take, there's like a mountain of chrome steering wheels, and they're like, yay, we get to all be drivers, and we're going to drive our way into Valhalla. And they kind of are crazy, paint themselves white, paint their mouths white with chrome paint, all sorts of stuff. It's super cool. So that was the kind of vibe I got, which I guess makes sense because these are both Australian things.
Sure.
And then we start to get the hint that this society may not be entirely mentally there. And we find out through Aaron and John's investigating that there's like radiation on the planet.
Yeah.
Yes, I got this right. I know, I paid attention to this scene. There's radiation on the planet, which I believe Zahn tells them. And they're like, uh-oh. We also learned, by the way, that everybody here dies at 22, which is a Logan's Run thing, I guess.
Well, they don't die. They start like dying.
Yes. Nobody lives far beyond that.
Yeah. Is the point. They get all scabby and gross.
Right. And we see someone who got a little old, and they constantly talk about John Crichton being the old guy, old man.
Yeah. And they call Aaron's son ancient, I think.
Which is, yeah. It's a lot of insulting Aaron's son in these two episodes. No, not cool. There was just once Crichton realized that, and then he was talking to someone who was all crazy, he had a really great line delivery, which I can't do full justice, but I'm just going to attempt. Nobody here has a clue. That's as Crichton as it gets. It's just him being angry that people are different.
Right.
And then he meets the main guy, and he's like, why are you making Chiana jump? And the guy's like, I'm not telling you anything unless you take these crazy drugs. And so we get the weirdest part of this whole episode, which is that Crichton's like, okay, sounds good. Let me take these crazy mushroom drugs. Which he does, excuse me again. He trips out, but not before the guy tells him, I'm making him jump because I don't want to jump. I'm making Chiana jump because I don't want to. So she's taking my spot.
Which
is bad.
But that doesn't make sense to me. So some people are required to jump?
I guess.
Okay.
They're like, yeah. I don't have a good answer for it. But all we need to know from that is that he's like, oh, I was supposed to, but no, now I'm going to make Chana do it. She wasn't supposed to, but I want to make her do it. And so then we get a couple scenes of Crichton tripping the hell out. Mm-hmm. Nothing super weird here in terms of that. I think he uses a syringe as an antidote at one point, which I said here, I'm positive I'm the only person in the world to notice that the syringe Crichton uses here is the same syringe from the Peacekeeper base, the Gammick base.
I noticed that too.
Oh, well, then we're best friends.
He's got those little jelly beans.
Yes, yeah. Same exact syringe. Solid prop use right there. And then we get a really touching, one of the best scenes in the episode, where Aaron's son and Crichton are talking about Chiana. Mm-hmm. He's all like, she's gonna kill herself. And she's like, Crichton. I can't. Nope, I'm not doing that.
No, please.
You need to understand. Chiana. If she's going to die, she's going to do it either way. See, it doesn't.
That's not bad. No, it's good. It's good.
That's my Claudia Black. It's very. You have to grit your teeth and go just like light Australian.
Yeah.
Like just yeah. I'm Claudia Black. Crichton. She says, yeah. Basically, if you don't let Chiana kill herself now, she's in a bad enough mental place that she will do it somehow, somewhere, eventually. Mm-hmm. Which is just a really elegant way to understand people with like mental health problems,
right?
Is like, if you tell them, no, don't kill yourself, it's such a bad idea, let me take the knife away from you, then you're not helping, you're just, you know, sort of making them feel bad for doing it once, for trying it once.
Yeah, you're sort of treating the immediate situation, but you're not really delving any deeper.
Precisely. So he then says that really great line where he's like, when did you get so sensitive? And she's like, I've experienced loss. And you're like, oh,
well, but then
Aaron's son,
what is he? He says the same thing back to her.
Well, he says, I've also experienced loss?
Yeah.
No, oh, yeah,
she,
he does.
They say, he says, when did you get so insightful? She says, I understand loss. And he says,
that's what it is.
So do I.
Yes.
Which is kind of right there. It's a wonderful encapsulation of both sides of the argument. Because really, he's not being unreasonable. He just feels completely powerless in this situation. And he's being motivated by a desire to keep people that he cares about alive. And he just doesn't know what to do, and he can't sit back and be calm about it the way that Aaron can. He wants to be able to take some kind of definitive action to further his goal, which is to keep Chiana alive. And that is wonderful, because I think a lot of people feel that way in their lives, where they just want to sort of take control of the situation and do something where they can demonstrably see that they're helping or they're improving things. And really the secret is that you have to kind of step back and let it go.
And accept that you don't have control.
Right. Which he does by the end of the episode.
And that right there is sort of the theme of this episode that became the meat to grab onto for the rest of it, is in order to gain control over something that you feel, like if the world feels like it's screwing you over, the way to take control is to let go.
Right.
Which is why the concept of taking the stone, I think, works for Chiana. I don't know if it works for these people who are just really plagued by radiation. So yeah, Zahn says, oh, there's a lot of radiation here. Crichton says, but wait, if there's not even enough to kill someone. He has that great line where he's like, is that a lot? Like, like Zahn's like, oh, it's like, yeah, 137.
I love that, because he doesn't know how their metrics work.
Yeah, and he's like, is that a lot? And then Aaron's like, it's not. It's not a lot. And he's like, oh, okay. But she's like, yeah, the pit amplifies radiation. So that's why all these people are suicidal and crazy and they want to go into the pit. Uh-huh. Because radiation. But for Chiana, I think there's that, and it's also the fact that she experienced a severe moment of trauma, losing her brother, right, losing one of the attachments she had to her old life, and also feeling like she has nothing on Moya for her, because at this point she doesn't have any romantic attachments, she doesn't feel particularly connected to anyone, and so she's kind of just getting further and further from her old life, as it's also, you know, those people are dying and her new friends don't even feel like friends anymore. Like, she has that line with Crichton where she's like, there's nothing for me there. Why do I keep going with you guys on these adventures? Like, I don't have any reason to just keep going with us. Yeah. I'm just here to exist, basically. And I don't want to live like that, which is kind of where her desire to end her life comes from. But what is really triumphant about the back half of the episode is, also, do I have any interesting notes on the way there? Oh, yeah. So at this point, we get a quick cut back to the B-plot, where Rigel has brought these treasures onto Moya.
Yeah.
And they all just start falling. He's like, yes, I'm the king. I'm the best. And then they all just start falling off of the cat of like thing that he hung them up on. Hangers. He's like, oh, no, they're cursed because they fall off. and not because I bought bad hangers from IKEA. Damn it. Dargo's like, you're crazy. And then he kind of gets a really brief, like, Frodo Baggins moment of like, no, these are great. These are good treasures. What are you talking about? Get away.
Yeah, the whole...
But that doesn't get developed at all.
The whole Rigel plot was just dumb. Because, I don't know, there was just nothing to it. There were a couple lines that I was amused by. The first time that we see the plot, and he's back on the ship, and Dargo's like, why are you on this ship? We, like, lost John and Aaron, and you were down there. Why are you back?
That was a fun part.
Where did they go? And my favorite line delivery of the episode is Rigel goes, down, underground, they went looking for Chiana. That's how he says it. But he's back with his fucking treasure, and he finds a creepy mask in there. And then there's a worm underneath it, and he says, bonus! And then he eats the worm. Which was great.
Yeah.
So that's great. And then this plot, by the way, you called it a B-plot, but honestly, it's taking up the real estate of a C-plot. We spend a lot of time with this Chiana thing. I would say, like, the equivalent of another episode doing an A and a B-plot, really.
Yeah.
Which I think is great, because it makes it feel really purposeful and methodical, and it lends a lot of time to a pretty important concept for the show. Because this is, here's the thing, right? We talk about the show being about finding home and that sort of thing. That's one of the driving forces for these characters, is finding a place to return to. Right. And we see one of the characters definitively getting the sign that, like, oh, it turns out I can't go home. Like, my family is dead. And there's,
I've lost another piece of my home, and I don't feel like this new home is mine yet.
Right, and there's no sense of closure whatsoever either. It's a heartbreaking. Like, imagine you have a sister.
I do.
Imagine if the way that you found out she was dead is like your watch used to light up, but now it doesn't light up anymore.
Ah,
and you haven't seen her or spoken to her in probably years, in cycles. You know.
It's arns and arns have gone by.
So it's a really important episode for Farscape and for the central theme of home, because it's like, hey, yeah, this is what these characters are looking for, but what if one of them finds out in the middle of their journey that they can't go back? What does that look like? Do they lose purpose? And it's great to see that they don't. They find purpose in other things. But yeah, so anyway, so this Rigel plot is really taking a heavy backseat to that plot, to the point.
Yeah, it's like 3 minutes of the whole episode. It's
right,
nothing.
Like, when we come back to it again, and he's hanging out with Zahn, that lasts maybe 50 seconds.
Yes.
Of the two of them interacting. And she's doing a cool chant, and he's like, get out of here, stop chanting. I don't want you
to chant. Like that scene a lot.
That was super fun, but it was also, like, lightning quick.
Yes.
But the thing that I just want to cover the whole Rigel plot right now, so just right, get it out of the way. The thing that I wasn't crazy about is there was no reason why that stuff was happening. And Rigel didn't learn a lesson either.
Yeah.
Because the lesson, theoretically, that he should be learning is, like, he stole from the dead, and that's disrespectful. You shouldn't steal from the dead. That's a morally bad thing to do. But what happened was he stole from the dead, and then it was haunted, and he's like, oh, this shit's haunted. I don't want haunted shit. I'm putting that back.
And he puts it back.
Right, he puts it back. And I thought maybe, like, Zahn was going to be doing it, but then Rigel assumed Zahn was doing it, so it's like, okay, they're not going to do that. So then nobody's trying to teach him anything either. It's just, it's taking up space, and it's not doing anything, really.
It almost felt like they needed to use those characters this week.
Exactly. Yeah,
and they're like, well, let's just, Rigel found a way, like, you can like hear the script meeting where they're like, we need Rigel to do something. He's on the planet. It's a graveyard planet, royal graveyard, finds, like, jewels, because he likes money and power.
Exactly.
And stuff.
Exactly.
But it's haunted, and they're like, how do we get rid of that? And he's like, we have, like, 43 minutes of the episode occupied out of 45. He puts it back. He learns his lesson.
All right, cool. Let's have lunch.
Who brought the Vegemite?
Yeah.
But yeah, the A plot, what's cool about the A plot is, like you were saying, it lingers and it kind of hangs, because it is a plot that could be summarized as Chiana wants to jump, and then she does, but everything's fine. Like, you could do that in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
But because they drag it out, because they really dig deep into the culture of these people, that's also why it feels a little confusing, is because they a lot of it isn't spent, dedicated to Chiana herself. Like, they spend a lot of time talking to other people from this clan and just hanging out on the planet and learning about each other. It's a lot of Aaron and John investigating. Mm-hmm. So we don't get a lot of actual, like, Chiana talking until the very end. I feel like the last scene with her and John makes up for so much of this episode.
Talk about it.
Which is the scene where she jumps.
Yeah.
Because he says, they have a sort of nice one-on-one talk where she's like, I don't have anything for me. And he's like, you know, we can work on that. We can talk about this. We can use communication and sort of become better friends and be a better group of people for you. Mm-hmm. And we can, you know, be a new family for you. She's like, that's understandable. I get that. But, like, I still need to jump. And he's like, wait, what? And then she jumps.
Yeah.
And that was the moment where I realized that this episode was not about her wanting to die, but it was about her wanting to live.
Yeah, exactly. She needed to put herself into a situation where she could
see it.
She could choose to live.
Yeah. She couldn't have them rescue her and be like, all right, we got you away from trying to kill yourself. Good job. You're exactly. Better now.
She needed to have everything boiled down to, do I want to bounce off the force field, yes or no?
Right.
Because if in that moment your answer is no, and you're Chiana, like, then what's the point of continuing on, really?
If you've got nothing else going on, then yeah.
Right.
And she lives. It's a beautiful moment. John gets a little overexcited.
He does. They kind of ruin it with a Breakfast Club freeze frame.
Yes, absolutely. He's like, you did it! And she's like, yeah! And she jumps in the air and freeze frames, and they're like, damn it. And then you think that would be the end of the episode, but it's not.
No, it's not. We're going to go for a little bit longer. We're going to kind of drag it out a tad. I just wanted to say, the great thing about the resolution of this episode is that partway through this episode does the Farscape thing of like, oh, you wanted to solve this with actions? No, we're going to solve it with words. Where John knocks her out and then tries to carry her out of there physically. And then Aaron's son says, no, put her back. Don't do that.
That doesn't work.
That's not how we solve problems. And then, like you were saying, you think that, okay, so then in this final scene, he's going to talk to her.
And talk her off the ledge.
But really, sometimes you can't, there's nothing that you can say to fix something. You just kind of have to let go and let it happen. So it's kind of, it's an inversion or a subversion of even the normal way that Farscape solves problems as a show.
Yeah. And so that happens and I got a little misty eyed and then Chiana buries her brother's life disc and, I forgot to mention the scene before. Crichton and Chiana have their little heart to heart is where my favorite couple lines of the episode also were. It's where they're all using measurements of time. And Aaron's like, it's been 3 arns. And then John's like, just give me a few more microts, okay? It's like, wow, it doesn't even like hesitate for you anymore. Those are the words you use now. But yeah, she buries the disc and then, Crichton asks Aaron if he seems a bit crazy lately, which is a good moment of clarity for Crichton, who's been acting crazy for a long time. Yep. Rigel puts the stuff back. Crichton talks to Chiana. There's that great line because they're all talking about like age and stuff. And she's like, oh, you should have tried doing the jump thing. It's super cool. He's like, oh, I'm a little too old for that. And it's like, dun, dun, dun. And then the episode ends.
Yeah. Just straight up shout out to Gigi Edgley for wrecking it this episode.
She's the best character on the show. Who said that? Me? It was me.
I disagree with that, but I think she was amazing in this episode. And I also think that most of the time, the people in the weird cult, even though we kind of don't really understand their motivations or exactly how their society functions, they had really cool characterizations to them as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
There were times when they had very teenager lines that bothered me, like, oh, we're just going to, it's fun to do these mushrooms, man. And it's like, don't do that. But then, like at the beginning when we first see them and they're talking in sort of weird, broken up, semi-poetic speech, and they're kind of shifting around and being all ethereal, that was really cool. So I think environmentally this was a very cool episode. And the pit also was well lit, and we get to see it in a couple different
some context. Weird CGI shots of it.
There were some weird CGI shots, for sure. But the pit, as in when you're up on the piers, or whatever the stone overlooks are called.
Yes.
there's like flashes of yellow lightning from time to time that make it look pretty cool.
It's a very cool set.
Yeah. And then the secret best part of this episode is the running thread of John and Aaron, I think.
Yeah.
Like, every interaction they have is wonderful. And it has that intimacy to it that we've come to really appreciate from John and Aaron. That sort of the intimacy that we saw in the pilot of this, in the first episode of this season, in that last scene where, you know, they're hanging out in Pilot's area and she's like, can people change for the better, basically. So it's great to see that Aaron's son has become the sort of philosophical thorn in John Crichton's side in these episodes, where she's posing the tough questions to him and being the voice of reason. Because you would think the way that the show initially set it up and set these characters up is John Crichton's the one who's like, hey, Aaron, you can be more than a soldier. You can be like a smart lady. And now she's being a smart lady. And he's like, can you stop? Can you not do that, please? I'm trying to have very simple views of what's going on here. So they have some great dialogue exchanges, like the sort of I understand loss, so do I moment. There's a moment where Aaron is going off to talk to Chiana. John says, be nice. She says, I'm not good at nice. And he says, okay, well, just don't shoot her.
Yeah. That was a fantastic line.
There are a couple others that I wrote down. We have, at one point he says, when she's telling him to put Chiana back after he knocks her out, he says, Aaron, what is wrong with you? You're the pinup girl for frontal assault. And then a great translator microbes line. He says, well, let's get her on the dog and bone. And she pauses for a second and says, whatever that means, Crichton.
Yes.
Which I didn't even know what that meant. It's just some weird idiom. But they were my favorite part. And then she gives him shit at the end of the episode for taking mushrooms in the middle of an important day. Like, oh, did you really need to take mushrooms? And he's like, I guess not.
Yes. The whole him taking mushrooms thing was really, that just felt like, hey, we want our main character to go crazy a little bit.
Yeah, and to look in the camera a bit and have some fun.
Which is my favorite version of Crichton. Crazy Crichton is the best, which we're going to get to.
Right. Another slang word that I wanted to bring up, they kept saying drad, or like something's going to be the draddest.
Yep.
Which I did not like. Because that's just rad with a D on it.
Yeah. What was, there's a version of that in like Buffy or something.
I don't remember.
Where they change one word of something and they make it.
Oh, well, they say like the way that something's giving you the willies, but it's not that. It's something like that.
Let's just rewatch all of Buffy so we can remember.
Yeah, let's do it.
Be right back.
Crap, now it's really bothering me. What did they say? It's like the scary.
The Wiggies?
The Wiggies.
Yeah, I watched that
show. The Wiggins.
No, not the Wiggins.
Is it not the Wiggins?
No. Wait, I'm Wiggin or something?
I don't remember.
Teens. I don't get teens these days. Wiggins. John, can you do that?
It's Wiggins.
Can you do that in one tab and in another tab give me the background information for this episode?
I sure can, man.
Courtesy of the Farscape Encyclopedia Project. Game recognized game!
Chia. So, this episode, Taking the Stone, has a little bit of background information to it. You could say that the original plan was for the pregnant woman to have her baby attached to the side of her neck, but that was changed to a see-through stomach. So, that's cool. Just
I think that could have been cool.
Gigi Edgley was comfortable on a trapeze, or on the trapeze. So
I'm comfortable on a trapeze.
All right. Rocknius O'Bannon had the idea for the cemetery planet when he saw a cemetery on a hill.
In Australia.
In Australia, that's right. Neri was going to be Chiana's sister, but Gigi Edgley asked that it be changed to a brother, which I think that makes more sense for her character. Chiana just seems like the kind of character who'd have a brother.
Totally. And that she'd be very attached to her brother.
Yeah. Which is, that's all just her performance that's coming from. Because we never see this brother.
Exactly. We were going to, though.
Right. We were going to. They just didn't have enough time. They wanted to work more of the brother stuff into what eventually became Peacekeeper Wars, but they just didn't have the time to do it. So I think this is all we ever really hear about him, is this episode.
Correct.
Sci-Fi Channel was letting Farscape deal with some more adult themes in this season, so that's why we're getting the sort of suicide and drug stuff in this episode. Rowan Woods felt that there were some missed opportunities in this episode. Let's see. Apparently he thought that this episode didn't quite work.
I guess.
At certain points. Okay. He doesn't give any specifics.
Yeah. That's one of those that happens. It's a weird episode.
The youths had to wear more clothing than initially planned because they had to hide the safety harnesses for the jumping.
That's hilarious. Because yeah. They kind of would have made more sense that they were, like, scantily clad.
Right.
Wacky people.
And then, in one of the deleted scenes for this episode, Crichton looks directly into the camera by accident. So that's why they deleted it.
Oh, whoops.
Yep, there you know. There you know.
There you
there you know.
Oh my god. How do you know? That is my new favorite catchphrase. And a good episode.
Yeah, I dug it.
An interesting one for sure. Do you want to talk about the next one?
Oh, whoa. Where are we? Magellan? You're here?
No, Alan, whoa, hey. This is great. Where are we? Everything's all... It's got rockets on it, and it's really tall and shiny.
Is this the Moya bag?
It must be. That's the only logical explanation.
I'll consult the computer later, but I think for now what we need to do is we need to read these feedback.
Hold on, I'm consulting the computer now. Hello there.
Hello,
oh,
computer.
Oh, hey, computer.
What's up?
What would you like to know?
Where are we, computer?
Yeah, where are we? That's a good question. You are in the Moya bag and the future.
But that's impossible. We traveled through time?
I guess. That, yeah.
Computer, you seem to have a malfunction in your speech capabilities. I think we're going to have to shut you down for now.
Hey, man. Whatever, do.
Well, the computer's asleep, so I think it's time for us to hop right into these delicious pieces of feedback that we got on the last couple episodes.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum, yum. Fill me up with some feedback. Thank you, Skate Chats listeners.
The feedback.
Magellan, you're here. You haven't been on a Moya bag in a hot while. How you been?
No, I haven't. I've been questing in the foothills of Tanzania for this new microphone.
It sounds so good. What microphone is it? Just to tell people things.
Well, let me tell you, it's the Rode Podcaster. It's for podcasters.
Like me and you.
Like me.
Okay.
Rode is an Australian company, and this is an Australian show.
Oh, that's appropriate.
A prode-priate.
Anyways, we got a lot of feedback this week, so let's jump right into it.
Let's do it. So, we got a few tweets. Well, I guess we'll start with the tweets, huh?
Yeah, sure.
You can tweet at us at Scapechats on Twitter.
Correct.
And we got a few corrections and pieces of info from at Old As Your Omens. Is that how you say that?
Correct. Frequent commenter and lovely human being.
Fantastic commenter. First correction here is on our pronunciations of some writers and directors for Farscape. So it's not Guy Gross, it's Guy Gross. Gross.
Gross.
I don't know. It's spelled Grawss as a phonetic help.
Right.
And instead of Tony Tilsa, which we thought, it's just Tony Tills.
Wonderful. Because we got a couple of people that got us on that. Apparently that's just a thing that you learn from listening to the commentary on the show. So Guy Gross is the composer of the show and Tony Tills is is one of the directors. So, thank you, Old As Your Omens, and other people who corrected us on that. We love to be corrected.
Yeah, so if you're looking for us to implement those pronunciation changes, we will eventually.
Yeah, just once the show catches up to the future paradox, it'll work out really nice.
Yeah, so now we know. So if we get those ones wrong in any episode before season 3, oh well. If we get other ones wrong, feel free to shoot that our way and let us know.
Thank you.
Also, Old As Your Omens said, wait, is that a church's line? Is that what that is?
That's old as something. Ooh, I'll look that up. I feel like you might be right. Old As Your Omens, if you're a church's fan, you're also extremely cool.
Yeah, Old As Your Omens, let us know where your name comes from. Anyway, they also said that taking the stone is some classic teenager camp, which is true. Very, very true. That is a campy, angsty episode.
I never thought of it as teenager camp, though. That's kind of a cute way to look at it.
So which parts of these are the actual tweet, and which parts are just info.
So the Guy Gross, the pronunciation stuff was a tweet. The Taking the Stone thing was a separate tweet. And then the thing that I'm about to read is a memo that was just like a notepad file that they sent on their phone to me, or to us. That was like a long block of text.
Perfect.
Also, yeah, apparently, according to Google, the Oldest Romans is a line from The Mother We Share, one of the best church songs.
Hey,
you're very cool. And I'm going to try and see churches this summer. So, fangirling. Anyways, we also, like we mentioned, we got a memo from Oldest Romans that basically just says, this is a couple of like bullet points about the show. We're going to learn about that Letterman jacket that Crichton has at some point. Zahn didn't. I like a lot of this feedback is about like Oldest Romans watched the like stuff with the commentary and learned a lot about how the show was produced. So she mentioned that Zahn did an ear kiss in Mind the Baby because her makeup would smudge, which is cute. And also the reason that they did a ton of ADR is because it was so hot in the set that they filmed the rest of the show in. And so they had to put a bunch of fans on everyone to keep them cool, especially Lonnie and Claudia Black, which is cute. They have a lot of hair.
Awesome.
Yeah.
At Angela Scrangela also tweeted at us. They said that they're loving the show and that we don't just criticize it. And we also got a correction on the Guy Gross situation. And I guess we were confused last episode what ADR stood for.
Correct.
It stands for Additional Dialogue Recording.
Thank you,
Angela. So there you go. Thank you for that one.
As always, we put up a Reddit thread every episode where people can talk about us and about the episode. And Reddit user Maridi, who I mentioned, I think either last week or a couple weeks ago, I misunderstood that I thought they were a new viewer of the show. It turns out they watched it before and they're a big fan. They had a bunch of comments about Mind the Baby and Talon being Moya's offspring and why they're mad. Because this was a lot of like, we were confused why the characters were mad at each other. What was the other thing in here? Oh, this is the part that made me really happy. Also, Alan, you have no problem in saying gaping vaginas, but you can't say penis in the podcast? Since you said vaginas and then referred to them as gaping, please say penis at least once, preferably by describing it as throbbing. Side note, John's characterization is interesting considering recent and future events. Maridi, I love a delicious throbbing penis. Thank you.
Penis.
Big throbbing, gigantic peen. Penis.
I don't know if I've said vagina, but vagina.
There you go. With the new mic, too. Oh, that's tasty.
Vagina.
Oof.
Penis.
I don't know why I feel weird about like anatomical words on podcasts. It took me a while to get used to swearing, too, so I'm clearly was raised in a Christian household, if you can't tell.
Our next two Reddit comments are both from Reddit user Blue Blaze Spear, which sounds like a fighting game franchise or something.
Yep.
The first is on episode 11, which was our coverage of the last two episodes of season one, which were whatever they were called, the plant one and the last one.
Yes. The last one is Family Ties. I don't remember what the plant one was called. It was
Bone to Be Wild.
That's the one.
Yeah. So... these comments are a little long, but I'll try to summarize, and you can find them on the respective Reddit threads. With regards to episode 11, Blue Blaze Spear said that Pilot's area of the ship is known as Pilot's Den, and I guess we kind of fumbled over trying to name that. I don't know where that's from, so if you have a source for why it's called Pilot's Den, or if somebody called it that in an episode, I'd love to hear it. I believe it, but... that's something that I wonder if it's like the characters call it that or if it was in some supplementary material, you know, and whoever the author was had to figure out a name for that place. Also, Rigel as a Hynerian is aquatic, which was established in IET. That's cool. I didn't pick up on that. So the whole waterboarding thing that Krayce did to Rigel was even less threatening. And it was already kind of weird because it was a puppet. And it's like, we don't believe that this puppet's really drowning.
Totally.
Let's see what else. Blue Blaze Spear shared our confusion about why Dargo was with John on the suicide run in the transport pod at the end of that episode. And the closest answer they have I'll just read this. The closest answer I ever got was that the timing of the mixture of the explosives meant that someone had to be doing it while the pod was flying toward the Gammek base, while someone had to fly the pod, because this was a specific instance where it probably wasn't wise to put it in the hands of autopilot. But even that answer is only partially satisfying. So I guess that makes sense. One person has to fly, one person has to set off the explosives. I don't know that we saw that happen in the episode, but that's fine enough for me to buy it. Just even the thinnest justification for why they're in the pod together, because I think we get a lot of great material out of that scene. But just a little bit of explanation.
Yep.
And then a little comment here about the cliffhanger. And the last paragraph here is talking about the concept of that huge cliffhanger at the end of season one with John and Dargo floating out in space. What's going to happen to these guys? Everybody scattered to the winds. And it seems very bleak, which we just finished season two. And let me tell you, we didn't know bleak from bleak. But the comment here is Blue Blaze Spear. Apparently, from what I'm getting, this you watched this live as the episodes were coming out. And so seeing it on TV, that cliffhanger was even more excruciating because you didn't have the benefit of knowing that there were three more seasons and that you could just start the next one. And then there's a question here asking if we address the near debacle known as the episode Re:Union. And then as far as waiting for a cliffhanger resolution, that was nearly a serious insult to injury. Good times. So we do talk about that is referring to the season two premiere that could have happened that was kind of adapted into an episode later on in the season. I can't remember if it was still called that or if it was called something else. But we do end up talking about that between our discussion of the season two pilot as well as our discussion of that episode, which is somewhere in the like episode 8 range, maybe.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So it gets covered as it becomes relevant to our episode discussions.
I'm trying to find the... I don't want to say something and then get corrected again, but people know what Reunion is. It's a thing that a lot of... But anyways, Blue Blaze Spear is catching up to the show, so that was their comments about episode 11, and this is their comments on episode 13, on the episode 13 thread, talking about how Mind the Baby felt like they missed an episode because Aaron and Krace are making a deal. She scoops up John and Dargo and drops them at the base. Krace and Aaron are working together, and how weird that was. And how we were when we did talk about regarding Union, because we talked about that in episode 13, which was last week, how that seemed really weird. They said, we original viewers were left with this huge cliffhanger, and there were suddenly whispers that the next season wouldn't even address the stuff that left us hanging, and the fandom collectively lost our dren, which is cute. And so the Farthing creators were like, oh, this people are so mad, we're going to just throw an episode in there, which I guess, yeah, that's Dream Little Dream. Is what that episode was going to be.
Right.
Because that was how the second season was supposed to start, which is interesting because I remember Dream Little Dream being a interesting episode for sure. The convenience of Zahn's cloaking ability is mentioned again later. And it's not that she can turn invisible, but that she can kind of like active camo Metal Gear Solid 4 into trees and shrubs. But it's not always a thing that she has access to. In the US during the initial run, the sex scene from Human Reaction was shortened. Which is weird, because that sex scene is going to become very important later. With Vitas Mortis, Magellan, they agreed with you about this, because they didn't like it very much, and they thought it was a skip-it episode. Old Nalam, mm-hmm. who was a character from, I forget who, because it's been a while since I've listened to these episodes, is it played by Melissa Jaffer, an actor whose name should seem familiar to us, who have seen through season 4. And then, yeah, so that sounds familiar, but... We haven't watched season 4 yet. So, small note about how the then Sci-Fi Channel gave Farscape autonomy. You've mentioned seeing through season 2 in real time. I wonder if you've noticed results of that. This might be a little spoilerish, but at the end of season 3, the Sci-Fi Channel started flexing its muscles again and supplying the creators of Farscape with network notes, and there are parts in season 4 where it shows.
Hmm.
Which, huh, very interesting. And then they're just excited to hear us talk about Crackers Don't Matter because it's a very divisive episode, and... They used to dislike it, and now it's one of their favorites.
Oh, that's interesting.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, so that's going to come up right after this.
That's the point about the network notes, I'll be sure to keep an eye out for that. That's really fascinating, because I do feel like they... So we're in the future, the computer said so that we're in the future. Here in the future, we've seen the first two seasons, and we're about to start our recordings for season three. So we're at a point where it seems like Farscape kind of has... it can run the table on almost anything it wants to do. And I guess it'll be interesting to see how that goes as season three goes on. In terms of Crackers Don't Matter, we also didn't like it that way. I don't want to spoil the discussion too much, but I think our sense was that we were kind of underwhelmed by the episode, just because it's so hyped up in everything that you read about Farscape.
And I just listened to the discussion about that episode yesterday, so y'all are about to hear it. And it's, you know, we had a lot of problems with, like, specific stuff in it, but it overall was an interesting experiment episode. I don't think it's necessarily a skip, but I would not consider it one of the best episodes of the show.
Sure, and we would love to hear what people think about what we have to say about Crackers Don't Matter.
Yes, so, yeah, please... Yeah. As always, yeah, we'll talk about that at the end of this, but, you know, we have the Red Thread where you can always post, and you can email us at scapechats@gmail.com and tweet at us at scapechats, and we love all those feedbacks, because they're all great, and we love you, and we want to know what you think about our nonsense. real quickly, while we're talking about Crackers Don't Matter, before we read this last thing, I believe it's in that episode that I mention that Neri, Chiana's brother, isn't going to come back, or one of us mentions that. You don't need to correct us on that. We have watched later episodes. Or that's actually from Taking the Stone. I'm sorry. So you just heard that. We know that Neri eventually shows up on the show briefly. So, whoopsie. We misspoke. We misspoke. Misspeak. All the time. For example, right there. It's great. I might cut that out. Anyways,
don't cut
ahead,
that.
Michelle.
What are you doing? Our final piece of feedback this week in the Moya bag comes from Reddit user
Fine, it's
Roombot.
Not getting cut. They're going to listen to the raw time travel magic.
Shush, I'm reading from Reddit user Roombot on episode 13. And Roombot says, haha, think this was the best episode of Escape Chats yet. Really enjoyed this one, and it sounded like you two had a great time recording it as well. Yeah, we did. Thank you so much. That's just a little positive feedback.
I like it when people are nice to us. Magellan, I feel a pull.
I feel like I'm being pulled backwards. Oh,
and
you
I don't know what to do about it.
Huh.
I'm being taken back and back and back to the past. To the past that is August of 2015. Magellan, hold my hand. We're going back.
Wait, I'm holding you.
Oh,
you two are going to the past now. Goodbye.
Computer, please. I'm scared.
Goodbye.
Oh, no. We're back. What?
Oh my god. Wow.
We have another episode to discuss, though. We can't leave just yet.
No, not just yet.
I know, but Magellan, I want to go watch more episodes and play video games.
I know you do, but first we have to talk about Crackers Don't Matter.
What? You mean the episode that was the fifth one of the season?
No, I mean the fourth one.
Oh, well, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was written season by Justin episode four. Monjo and directed by Ian Watson. Is that his name?
Yes.
Good, I did it from memory.
Really?
Yeah, actually.
When did it air? Tell me.
Well, if I had listened to the date that you said for the other one, I could just add 7 days and I would know.
April 7th.
There we go.
Oh, did we mention that we got a new thing added to our personal soundboard that we will again link to in the episode description?
What did we get added to it?
That was not loud enough. There we go.
Good.
So if you're ever like, oh, Dargo was all weird, he was all like, wacky.
Great.
That's from last week.
Yes.
For people who are playing at home. Don't play at home.
Just listen.
Just listen. We're talking about Farscape. What do you think about Crackers Don't Matter?
Oh my.
Did it turn out that they did?
God, no. It turned out they did not matter. And this episode is balls crazy.
It's bonkers. I loved it.
It's wackadoo.
It's, whoa. Look at you stealing my vocabulary, and I appreciate it.
Sorry.
No, I like it. I want you to. Spread the word, man.
Spread the good word.
Wackadoo. Sir, have you heard the good word of wackadoo?
Well, no, I haven't.
Wackadoo. Well, sir, let me tell you. Wackadoo.
Oh, that's a good word. Oh, sorry, you had more.
Ah, yes. I made this whole sales pitch about wackadoo. But if you're going to use it, I mean, go. You're good.
Cool, great. Anyway. So, Crackers Don't Matter. I'm just going to smooth this into the plot because that ends pretty quickly. and then we can talk.
Smother this in like a hot cup of Jiffy peanut butter with crackers. I'll be right back. I'm going to go get some peanut butter and crackers.
No, crackers don't matter. Anyway, so we start off.
I guess you're right.
We're in Moya, as we usually are. And I think the first thing we see is John talking to Chiana, and she got a lot of crackers.
Yeah, what? So she like went on a supplies run?
Yeah, and just got crackers.
That's like, I live in a college dorm room and I don't know how food works.
Exactly.
And I know how money works.
But I'm glad they cleared that up right out of the gate. I wrote down, okay, so the word crackers here refers to the fact that they have a fuck ton of crackers. So that's good.
And not that's good the enough. Fact that they're worried about white people.
Right, which was a possibility.
That would have worried me. Cried in like 60 minutes.
Does he talk about 60 minutes?
Yeah.
That's cool that he liked that.
Do
they have TV in Farscape? Because they have those little like holographic announcement things. Kind of like a Star Wars situation.
I think it is like a Star Wars thing where they don't have TVs, but they can like send transmissions.
That seems like a weird gap in space development.
Well, I think it's important that the crew of the Moya doesn't have access to like culture. Because they have to feel isolated and they have to feel like they're by themselves.
Right, but now I'm talking even just about Star Wars. Like they don't have TV. Which seems easy.
What I'm saying is we're doing a Star Wars podcast.
Star Chats.
Oh, I'd do it. So I would do it.
Zahn is talking about this guy, Trautix, which sounds like a brand of crackers.
I said that it sounded like an antidepressant for lizards. But it works for both.
Is your Komodo dragon getting down? Get him some Trautix, and then it's like a black and white lizard, but then it lights up and there's flowers around him and stuff.
There's like all sorts of colors.
Yeah. No, Trautix.
Who's Trautix, Majon?
He's, he's not a lizard at all. He's in fact a weird guy with no eyes and a CPAP machine. That's who Trautix is.
He has a curtain over his face and it's like, just blow that out of it. Just blow that away. Why is it sitting over your eyes?
Yeah, he's like if somebody took a sledgehammer to a Bith.
Nice.
He's just a weird looking alien dude.
He's cool looking though.
He is cool looking. I'm not disputing that.
Relax, I'm sorry.
And John Crichton's like, I don't trust this guy. Why'd we bring this guy on board? He's going to do evil stuff. And they're like, no, he's going to make our shit invisible.
Which is a reasonable, like, yeah, someone would want that.
Yeah, that's cool for us to have. That's pretty rad. And he does make their shit invisible. He turns the Farscape 1 into like a Wonder Woman situation. Which is very cool. Thank you.
Is that a permanent thing? Does that like happen?
I don't know, because I think the thing gets broken during the fight at the end.
Oh, that's what's happening in the cold open when they're like, he's like, what? I don't get it. And they're looking at him like, are they seeing it as invisible, but he's not? Is that what happened in the cold open?
What happened was it was like slowly turning invisible and it didn't reach the whole ship within the 10 seconds. And so it was everything behind him was invisible.
Oh, that's why he was like, you gotta do it for 10 seconds, no more, no less, or whatever.
Yeah, well, 10 seconds, any more than that, and it overheats and explodes.
I see.
Is what we're told.
Hmm.
So this guy is, like, helping them turn stuff invisible, and he wants them to take him to his home planet for some reason. Either as payment, or there's stuff there that he needs, something like that. And that's the exchange.
Right, correct.
But we, as an audience, and John Crichton, we all know that he's going to be bad because he's a new alien. That was the only part of this episode that bothered me, is that he was a bad guy. Because it was like, yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, this episode needed an antagonist.
I know, but it didn't, like, everyone knew. Even characters in the episode knew that he was going to do some wacky shit. And they didn't really take any precautions against
that. The thing that bothered me about this episode is that they just kind of solved it by just, like, I didn't fully get why everything worked out in the end.
Well, they solved it by being like, hey, wait a minute. Remember at the beginning when I said that the new guy would cause problems and problems have been happening? Yeah, I was right. He's causing problems. Let's go fight him. Which is like, okay, fine. Luckily, plot is not a hugely important part of this episode at all.
What is the important part of this episode?
Well, the important part of this episode is that there's a lot of crackers being eaten, which is reinforced by the first scene that we get out of the titles, where John is talking to Pilot. He's just eating a nice cracker. They're having a conversation. I wrote down here that I was surprised that Pilot blinks, because I never thought about that.
He does a lot of blinking in this episode.
There's a lot of blinking and a lot of like pausing and not talking. And blinking during that, which is just, that's great. puppetry, really, that they make him blink and you don't even think about it because it just seems so natural.
Exactly.
They're on the bridge at some point, and Trautix is like, yeah, my planet, it's only one solar day's travel beyond the five pulsars.
Ugh.
Thank you for the directions, sir.
Appreciate that.
Also, they don't have another word for day.
Yeah, they have the second, hour, year, and I think that's it. And they don't have anything for day or, like, month.
Right. Which would lead me to believe that that is not a standardized measurement.
Oh, probably.
Because the only way that microts and cycles make sense is that it is a standard measurement that's different from seconds and years. And arms are different from hours, because otherwise John would hear them as hour and second and year.
I also just thought maybe they don't use the concept of a day because they're in space. And so,
well, but they say solar day. Other way you could say it, I guess, is like it's a concept that translates, whereas microts and cycles are more arbitrary demarcations of time.
Oh, right.
So you can say solar day in like any language, and it's going to translate because we also measure our days based on the sun.
Yes.
But like cycles, it gets into the situation of, well, we measure years by one planet's rotation around the sun, and that is not a revolution around the sun, and that is not nearly going to be standard across multiple planets. Anyway, whatever. This is the minutia of Farscape lingo. So he's saying, hey, there are these pulsars. Lesser beings are going to get affected by the pulsar light in a weird way, but don't stress about it. You guys are really smart. It's not going to happen to you. Oh, by the way, what's Zahn doing? She's being weird. I'm just having an orgasm. It's cool. Just having a lot of orgasms. I'm going to keep doing that all episode. Thank you.
Part of me likes that, and part of me thinks the best part of all of Zahn's plot was when, at the very end, sorry to just be jumping around a little bit, but when Shiana's like, so what were you up to? And she's like, oh, you know, I was having fun. Shiana kind of looks at her like, hey, nice. They have this kind of like bro-y eyebrow raise of like, I know what you were up to. You were getting swerved.
Yeah, it was a little frustrating, but honestly, it was much less frustrating than in, what was the episode called? It's the goggles one, the cool goggles one.
Until the Blood Runs Clear?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Sorry for the event that's happening outside my window, by the way.
It's fine.
It's just a cavalcade of fun. Yeah, we were bothered by her orgasms until the blood runs clear because it was just like they're taking her out of the episode.
Meanwhile, Zahn blows up.
Yeah,
sexually.
Right. But in this episode, it was kind of like, hey, everybody is doing something weird and crazy on different parts of the ship. And she also still interacted with the other characters.
Yeah, she's just in a corner, like, just, you know.
So it's just like some of her scenes, she is having an orgasm while she's talking. Or excuse me. A photogasm. We should call them photogasms. Because Virginia Hay doesn't think of them as sexual.
Really?
Which is in the background information. But I just wanted to throw that in now. I wrote down that this episode is hilarious, which seems early in the episode to call it that, honestly. Basically, overall plot. Because now we're getting into vignettes of all the characters acting weird. But the way you can sum it up, they start off, Trautix is there, he's like, this pulsar light's going to do some weird stuff. And they're all like, weird stuff. We're smart. We're not going to get weird. Then everyone gets weird
well, and there you go.
Starts to really distrust each other.
I love the gradual descent.
Right. Because right at the beginning, there's some rationality to it. And you think like, okay, maybe it's they're distrusting each other for legitimate reasons. John is upset that Trautix is on board. He doesn't trust him. That makes sense. Right. Aaron's son is fiddling with this the hologram thing where Scorpius is sending out his wanted message. It makes sense that some people would be distrustful because she has received messages from Peacekeeper Command in that way in the past. I believe until the blood runs clear.
Yes. And so Tiana has good reason to believe
that. Like, are you? Scorpius is sending her a message.
Yes.
We as an audience don't necessarily buy that because it's like we did that plot last season, but Tiana wasn't there, so it makes sense that she would be bothered by it.
Sure.
Then things start to get more and more irrational. Characters start to suspect that other characters are in cahoots against them for some reason. They start forming weird alliances.
Yeah, just all the teams. Lots of good Whedon's test in this episode.
And we'll dig into it in a second. I just want to cover the big plot. Everybody gets crazy, super crazy.
wackadoo, one might even say.
One might say wackadoo. Then, towards the end of the episode, John Crichton is like, hey, I'm crazy, but it's Trautix's fault, guys. I beat you all up and trapped you in this room so I could tell you that it's Trautix's fault. They're like, fine, let's beat up Trautix. And then he does. And that's the episode. And then at the end, they all feel bad for saying mean stuff to each other.
And they apologize for like 10 minutes.
And Trautix's plan is he wants to activate Moya's bioluminescence for some reason.
I mean, he wants to do the opposite of what he said he would do. He wants to make them more noticeable. Well, he doesn't do it to make them more noticeable. He's like, oh, I'm going to light her up.
Yeah, but there's never a reason why, really.
Because he wants
to see? Is that what it is?
No. The light gives them power, which is why the more light that he gets from Pilot and from Moya, the more people go crazy, mm-hmm. because the light is directly tied into how crazy he's able to make everyone get.
Okay.
And so when he has like half of the ship's systems devoted to just making him glow and making the, like, as they say, making the walls glow, which is a cool line, mm-hmm. The more power he has, which will eventually let him overtake this ship because he has full control over its systems and can make everybody that gets on it crazy and make them all leave. Because he keeps telling Pilot, like, yeah, you should probably get rid of them. They're like useless. He's like kind of whispering sweet nothings into Pilot's ear throughout this episode. Yeah. And he wants to get rid of them so that he can take the ship and that his entire, like he says at the end, the thousands of us, like me, are going to take every, what's the type of ship? Every Leviathan, and we're going to do this to all of them because we control.
Okay, so just like light makes him more powerful.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Now, him talking to Pilot was like scary to me.
Yes.
That somebody could turn Pilot against the rest of the crew, because they're screwed if that happens.
It's a scary idea that you can just, but what's also interesting is he isn't lying to Pilot at all.
Right.
He's just saying things that are like, yeah, I can reconcile that. Like, yeah, they're not helping. And also they're making things more difficult than easy. He just doesn't take into account the fact that Pilot presumably likes the crew. And so Pilot's like, wait a minute, they suck. I should get rid of them. They're the worst. Oh my God. And it's creepy.
Yeah. So, why don't we just dig into it and popcorn style. Moments that you liked.
Well, I'd like to spread butter on the first line, which is, you said popcorn style.
Yep.
Well, there's a lot of weird ones. I really, really appreciated Ben Browder in this episode so much.
Yeah.
He runs the full spectrum.
He does.
I think my favorite series of lines from him, I don't have the exact lines written down, but it was the stuff about ice cream.
Yep.
That was...
Where's my damn ice cream?
If I could start pulling clips more easily, this would be an amazing episode to do it.
And then Raija's like, I know all the foods of the galaxy, and I've never heard of your Ibs cream.
Ibs cream. Yeah. He's like, I need some ice cream. And then he's like mumbling to himself, like, Ripple, vanilla chocolate.
Ben and Jerry.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That was great.
Was that just him? Was that just him like yelling at the crew, being like, I want this?
He's just being crazy. This episode is called Crackers Don't Matter because there's a lot of food politics playing into this, which is, again, something that slowly develops, and we think it's going to be a big deal. It starts with Chiana's in the hold eating crackers, and Dargo comes in and he's like, you're eating too many crackers, girl.
Bad person.
Why are you eating so many crackers? Don't do that. Or is it Dargo who yells at her? I think it is.
I think so.
Somebody does. Somebody reprimands Chiana for possibly stealing crackers, and she claims that she's not. Then it gets to Rigel. He learns that Chiana is potentially eating too many crackers, so he goes down there.
Who tells him? Is it Rigel who tells him, or is it Aaron who tells him?
I don't remember. Somebody tells him.
Someone comes up to his cell, and he's like, I'm safe by myself. None of the light affects me. Screw you guys. And they're like, yeah, but all the food's gonna be gone.
I think John might tell him.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Because John's trying to, like, start stuff.
Yeah. So Rigel goes down there to eat some crackers. Then Dargo walks in. And he's pissed. Because he's like, Rigel, you're stealing food.
And that's bad.
And then the scene happens. Very, very cool scene where Dargo Rigel down to the table and force feeds him crackers to the point of nearly killing him.
Legitimately creepy.
Yeah, but also really funny.
Well, what also makes it funny is that, Magellan, you found a video this week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You found the Farscape blooper reel.
Yeah.
Which is just a 2-3-part series on YouTube?
2-part.
Yeah, of just, like, bloopers from, I don't know, some like, DVD collection. And one of the funniest bloopers is just the different takes that Anthony Simcoe took to shove crackers down this puppet's mouth. And for most of them, he's just cussing and just like, it's all bleeped out, but he's just freaking out. And the actual on-screen version of it is, like, crazy. It's just very tightly shot, and he's like, eat him! Eat him! And you're like, oh my god, he's gonna kill Rigel, this is the end, this is
also, most unsettling part of that blooper reel is hearing Anthony Simcoe's real voice. Because there's one part where Ben Browder cracks up in the middle of Dargo yep. talking.
He's like, oh,
I was doing some real acting. Americans. Terrible. It's like, oh my.
You're like, no, Anthony Simcoe, no, you're not that. That's not
and
you.
And then I watched a bit of an interview of him, and he's just awkward-looking, tall, blonde guy.
Isn't he bald?
No, he's blonde.
Oh, yeah.
This might have been post-show or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. So, yeah, he almost kills Rigel. And if it was a living character, it would have been scary. But the fact that he's a little puppet and he's getting crackers shoved in his face is scary, but also goofy.
Yeah.
Right. So that stuff is going on. And then Aaron and Rigel team up to secure some crackers, basically. Yes. Aaron gets Rigel to team up with her. And that's when John Crichton walks in. And they have that ice cream exchange. Any other bits that you were fond of?
The ladies got into a lot of fights.
Oh, yeah?
I'm trying to remember specifically. Aaron and Chiana. Is that one? Is that a combination that happened,
I think? I think so.
Yeah, that's just a lot of... there's the scene where Aaron is, like, playing with the recording, and Chiana's like, let me see it. That's a funny scene, actually. And John's like, he comes in as the big, tough mediator guy. He's like, what's going on here? And she's like, she won't let me watch it. There must be something sketchy on there. And then Aaron's son's like, I got nothing on here. There's nothing weird. And he's like, all right, well then play it. And then she's like about to. Everything's about to be fine. But then Chiana's like, wait a minute. Why do you want me to listen to it? You're like, there's no solving things.
And that's the first, I think one of the early instances where it's like, okay, this episode is going to get irrational.
Yes.
And then we get that's where a lot of the politics begin to break out. In the early episode where John and Aaron are kind of on the same side, and then Dargo and Chiana team up eventually in there. And Dargo's convinced that John and Aaron are colluding and trying to get off the ship, or they're trying to get the peacekeepers to come to the ship, which doesn't make any sense because Scorpius only wants John and doesn't care about the rest of them. So why would John Crichton want Scorpius to find them? Right. But they're being irrational and crazy. And so they're convinced that that Zahn is an agent of John and Aaron's, and so Dargo does his tongue thing to knock her out. And then John comes in and confronts them and talks about something. And then he leaves. And Zahn is like there on the floor unconscious. And Chiana's like, he didn't care about Zahn. And Dargo's like, hold on. I can make sense of this. And then she kind of runs away. And that's great because Dargo and Chiana get to have this weird...
Bonnie and Clyde?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Bonnie and Clyde thing, where they're kind of sexy buds.
You and me against the world kind of thing.
So that's a cool dynamic for the two of them to have.
Coolest dynamic of the episode, though?
No, not at all.
No, I'm saying, do you want to know what the coolest dynamic of the episode was?
I do. I hope yours is different from mine, but I doubt
it is. No, mine's probably different.
Oh, yeah? What's your favorite dynamic?
John and Scorpius?
No, yeah. What are you talking about? That, of course.
Talk about it.
You want me to talk about it?
Yes, because I know you liked it a lot.
Basically, we get to a point in the episode where John stumbles across the beacon that Aaron was toying with, the Scorpius beacon.
Yes.
And then it's hitched. It's repeating the same thing over and over again. And then he starts talking to it. And then Scorpius steps out of it, and now he's seemingly corporeal. And for the rest of
The descent into madness. Right.
For the rest of the episode, John Crichton is talking to Scorpius. And Scorpius is trying to convince him to kill people and so that they can go to the beach together. There's a point where he has a Hawaiian shirt, and he has my favorite line of the whole episode.
Yep.
Where
do you have it exactly? Yep,
he says, kill her. Then we'll have pizza and margarita shooters. And then John Crichton's response is, nobody has margaritas with pizza. And then he shoots the fake Scorpius.
It's so good. Yeah. That's like one of those clips that you can take out of context and be like, look how weird this show gets.
That dynamic reinforces the idea that this is just The Shining. There's a lot of The Shining going on in this episode.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
John Crichton specifically says, "Here's Johnny" at one
point. Oh, yeah. That's a cool physical scene.
Yeah. They really botched it, though, because they didn't show the shot of him poking his head in and saying, "Here's Johnny."
Yeah. He says it, and then they show him.
Yeah. The audio of him saying it is like him, he's in the background, and then it zooms in, and he's like, just said it.
It's timed terribly. Yeah, I thought like the sync fell off the episode or something.
It's really weirdly edited. Like maybe they didn't get a good take of him doing it or something. I don't know. But it was just off. One kind of questionable scene happens in the middle of this John Scorpius dynamic, though. And it is John's walking down the hall and he runs into Chiana. And then,
the scene.
He like tries to rape her pretty much.
Oh, not pretty much. Absolutely.
Absolutely. He tries to rape her. And the only thing that stops him is Scorpius being like, no, we'll save her for later. She'll be a reward after we kill everyone else. And that's not cool.
Gross.
And he's throwing out words like slut and whore and things like that.
It got way too real. The whole episode super, is like wacky and fun. And even when it's like cartoon violence, like the crackers stud thing, it feels like, okay, this is violent and insane, but like madness with purpose. This just felt like madness to an nth degree. Because we already have like established that the relationship between the two of them is weird. And we've also established that this craziness is making people sometimes say things that they do mean, but that they wouldn't normally say. So it like adds a weird, uncomfortable dimension to like what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Because you have a weird imbalance of this thing creating that sort of like, oh no, we all drank truth potion and now I'm going to tell you that you've got big hips. Whoopsie. And then on the other side, it's like, I'm being possessed by a demon that tells my real sexual fantasies and I'm going to pin you against a wall and rape you. And it's like, ooh, okay. Those two are both things that can be caused by things that reveal the truth, quote unquote, or at least that they reveal something deep and suppressed.
Yes.
But they are not tonally congruous.
It's just that, that was the scene where I was like, whoa, cool it. And then, I mean, to be fair, it like comes, the other implication is that Scorpius, like he's being influenced by like, the crazy guy in his head, but that doesn't fix anything.
No, it doesn't.
It's just a weird scene.
And it was also accentuated by just the previous episode and them kind of establishing this paternal relationship between John and Chiana to some extent.
Yeah. Well, just last week it was like, thanks, buddy, you survived and you taught me how to live. Now it's like, oh, spread your legs for everyone who's around. And you're like, oh.
Whoa.
I think it's intentional, though. It's just a weird, like, writing/directorial decision. Alas, show is problematic sometimes.
Well, but I'm trying to decide if it's the show that's being problematic or if it's John that is.
Well, I mean, I'm saying it's the show because it's within the context of the whole show. I'm not saying the show is, like, making it a point. I'm just saying it's saying, hey, one of our characters, when, like, you know, released of his inhibitions and made a little bit crazy, says some very shitty, misogynist, villainous things, almost, to another character.
Right, but then that's not the show being problematic.
Yeah, it's just, you're saying it's John Crichton being problematic.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, you can have a character that's shitty and not, that doesn't mean that the show is saying something shitty. Yeah, I guess you're right. Right.
Anyway, that scene was just, it was off-putting in an episode where...
And in a show... That is so good with that stuff, usually.
Right.
Yeah. Just a bummer. Moving on, though.
Other stuff that's going on.
Lots to talk about crackers.
Yeah. I enjoyed Aaron and John's fights.
Best line. Can I trust you? Like, when they're, like, about to leave and go fight?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, no, you can't fucking, you can't trust me. He's like, well, alright, that's fair. At least you're honest. But yeah, they do a lot of good fighting.
Yeah, and then there's that moment where Aaron is like holding the gun up to her head.
Oh yeah, that was the here's Johnny scene though. Yeah.
And John's like, look what you're doing. Look, you're holding a gun to your head. And she's like, oh, thank you. It wasn't set high enough. And then she shoots him and tries to kill him.
That's one of those scenes that it almost feels less crazy because you know that they were like giggling through the whole thing.
Right.
So it's just absurd. But yeah, very funny. Did we nail all of the major beats though?
I think so. I mean, there are just smattered scenes of weird things going on.
Oh, well, okay. We didn't get to the end of the episode, though. There's a lot of craziness. And then John Crichton's like, all right, well, we need to fix this. And one of us needs to go take out, what's the blind guy's name again?
Trialtix.
Antidepressant for lizards. All right. And so that the way they do it is, okay, Dargo should go because he's a fighter. And they're like, no, Dargo has good eyes. And John has baby dumb, dumb eyes.
Yeah, I like that. Or he, and then, you know, could read the writing on the
on the lamp or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, oh, I guess I mean, I have fine eyes for you guys. I'm better than 20/20 vision. He's like a little tipsy, it almost felt like. Yeah. He's always a little bit. Ben Browder always plays his, like, you know, gruff or like a little bit angry moments as like a little drunk to me, which always is funny. But they're like, all right, you have the bad eyes, so you're gonna go fight Trialtix. And we're gonna arm you to the teeth in what isn't really a montage sequence, but felt like a just classic 80s, like, suiting up, sequence, where, he gets, like, this paste put all over his face and, like, hair, and it turns out that it's, Zahn's, like, re-barfed up, like, stomach juices. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, it protects from, like, UV lights, and he's like, ew, but cool. He goes, it smells like puke, and she's like, yeah, I digested it earlier, and he's like, it's puke. Very cool. Cool. And then Dargo gives him goggles, and he's like, I hate these goggles. It's another weird Ben Browder line. Chiana gives him a cool cloak, and then Aaron's like, hey, here's a shield. I made it out of the side of my ship. That's a weird scene. And then he kind of, like, does, like, a cool little anime pose where he's like, hi-ya! And he, like, raises the sword up in the air and he looks all badass. But not really, because he looks like he has a garbage bag and the goggles placed over his face. And they're like, well, we're all dead. And so our hero, John Crichton, goes to take on the villainous Trialtix in a really weirdly shot scene.
Yeah, the whole episode is weirdly shot.
Yes, but this scene specifically because of all the, like, noodly pipes and whatever. And the fact that you almost never see Trialtix until he's dead. That scene happens so fast. Like, Crichton goes in, and he's like, I gotcha, and then he starts cutting away at the, like, supports that are giving Trialtix more light, and he's, like, cutting at them, and then Trialtix is like, no, stop! And then Trialtix is, like, hitting him with these generic I-beams, like something out of the X-Men, and he blocks all of them, and then, how does he knock him down? Does he just, like, bounce the light back at him? He knocks him off of that weird plot, that, like, hole.
I don't remember.
He gets knocked, the Trialtix gets knocked down. Crichton just stabs him. Just hardcore stabs him with a cool sword.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the Qualta blade, by the way. I forgot to mention that. That's what Dargo gives him. Just stabs him and, like, twists it, and it's great. And so Trialtix is taken care of. Yay! And then the rest of the episode is spent people apologizing for being bad people.
I wrote down that it was a weird ending, but I don't remember the very, very end of it.
Oh, do you want me to tell you what the very end of it is?
Is it just where...
Oh, no, yeah. Crane's like, hey, Zahn. Zahn's the only person left in the room. And he's like, can I take back all the stuff that we all said? And she's like, I don't know.
Right.
That's probably why it was weird.
Because we have... All the characters are kind of apologizing to each other. So you have Dargo trying to apologize to Rigel for, you know, killing him. And Dargo's like, do you accept my apology or whatever? And Rigel's like, no, not yet. Which is kind of nice that he's at least going to forgive Dargo eventually. But he's obviously upset that he reached up to them. Aaron and John share a nice moment of near wordlessness. Where they're like, oh, hey, you know that I didn't. Yeah, I know. Me neither. Okay, cool. See ya. yeah, just an odd episode. I think part of what was odd about that ending is that a lot of them saying bad stuff to each other was presented as pretty comical. And it was also, there wasn't anything revelatory to it. The sort of the stuff that they said, like, what, John said that Aaron had a flat butt.
Yeah, that's not anything. I think, yeah, I would hesitate to call it a skippable episode because there's so much fun acting in it. But yeah, nothing comes out of it other than we all feel
also,
bad.
Was I watching it right when he apologized to Chiana? She's like, no, it was cool. Like, I respected you.
She did say that. I was very confused and worried about
that. Yeah, that was problematic, for sure. That's the show being problematic.
Yes. And I think that's what I was getting at earlier, is, like, he's saying these things, but it doesn't come without, like, it comes without consequence. Like, it should have some sort of consequence.
Sure, yeah.
But at the end, he's like, I'm so sorry I said all those horrible things. And she's like, dude, it's fine. I kind of got the implication that Shiana has heard stuff like that before. And she's like, ah, this happens. Like, people say shitty, gross things to me all the time. And that's, like, a bummer. That's, like, a fairly honest but sad way to look at it, I think. It was just a weird. And then also there was a, I guess I wrote here, there's a weird implication in that ending scene that Eren has super strength. She, like, lifted a table or something.
I think she was probably just too crazy to notice that it hurt to move it.
Oh, that might have been what it was, yeah.
Yes.
Also, right before Crichton went to fight Trolltix with, like, the whole getup, he said something about, like, oh, don't count the Mipipippies, and I got really excited because I remembered that line. I hope that's a running thing for the whole show. But that was Crackers Don't Matter.
Yeah, just sort of a weird diversion.
Definitely. Speaking of diversions, can you give me a weird diversion and tell me about the background information for this episode, please?
Ben Browder added the humming of Ride of the Valkyries in during ADR. I don't remember when that happened, but it was added during ADR.
It was definitely off camera, so that would make sense.
Danny Adcock was the guy who played Trolltix.
Yes.
And he had to look through a series of mirrors in order to see out of the smashed Biff face.
Oh, jeez.
Ian Watson, the director, described this as a retelling of The Shining, which we've said there.
Yep.
He also says that they made some deliberately odd choices during production, like doing weird music during certain scenes, or the scene where they're fighting, where John and Eren are fighting, and they both say, "Are you out of bullets? Are you out of bullets?" And then they run to each other and, like, try to fight hand to hand.
Oh yeah. No, she goes, do you have an extra, like, clip or whatever? And he's like, no. And then he just runs at her, or they run at each other.
Oh, because she asks for more bullets. That's what it is.
Yes, that's what it was.
Here, Watson is talking about the near-rape scene, saying, "We shot that second unit about a week after I'd shot the whole episode. I was looking at a rough cut of the whole episode, and I thought, this hasn't gone dark enough for me."
Oh, come on.
The story was, they were meant to turn on each other, really turn on each other. There's always a level of niceness, even in dark eps, a line you don't cross. But Crichton doesn't always have to be likable, and he can go to a place where he's abhorrent to women particularly. It was designed as an ad hoc response.
That makes some sense.
It makes sense for why it feels out of place. It also makes sense for why the ending is weird. If the apology was shot before that, and Crichton's like, "Hey, sorry," and she's like, "It's cool," then she wasn't saying it's cool about the rape stuff. She was saying it about the other stuff.
Oh, well, that's just weird editing then, I guess. Or the weird post.
Just weird that they added this scene in afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. I just think the idea of using that, like, almost rape plot as a, like, oh, we needed to go darker is weird.
Yeah, it's I think it's wrong-headed.
Yeah. It's the wrong way to do that.
Rocky has a band saying that they were still trying to find the ultimate tone of the show, how far it could go without going absolutely too far. He felt that the near rape could have been seen as over the top, but felt that it was really a question of muscle flexing to see how far we could push the show. Which, okay, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
If you're just going to do it this one time and then we don't do that shit again, then I get it. You got to figure out where the boundary is. But, you know, you should have known that was kind of where the boundary was.
Yeah, come on.
This episode was written quickly due to production delays on Picture If You Will, the next episode. Nope, two episodes from now.
Oh,
And the production required a ship-bound story, so this episode was just sort of like, hey, let's throw together something weird to...
Oh, I guess that makes sense. Time. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Then, let's see. At the time this episode was produced, Crichton's vision of Scorpia... Oh, hey, don't read that one.
Oh, spoilers?
Don't read that one.
This is why we read them. This is why you read them. You the real MVP.
The force-feeding scene had to be edited because it was too violent. It originally required major contortions from the puppeteers. These contortions nearly broke the new Rigel puppet that had been introduced in this episode. Which would have been bad because it's a good puppet.
It's a great puppet. And they shot it real close. You can tell there were some cuts.
Yeah. And Virginia Hay felt that Zahn's photogasms were not sexual, but that as a plant she needed the light to feel complete.
Sure.
All right. Sure. That's the background info.
I appreciate that.
Hey, you're welcome.
Speaking of background, you want to give me the background for next week on Farscape and next week on Scape Chats?
I sure do. I surely do.
And while you pull those up, should I do credits?
Credits. I don't know what that means, but yes.
Plugs and such.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys have been listening to Scape Chats episode 14. You can email us questions and comments at scapechats@gmail.com. That's scapechats with a Z at gmail.com. And you can also find us online, and we're all over the place. And we love you, and we hope you enjoy this episode. But we're not done yet.
No, we're not.
Because we got a sneak peek at next week.
Now, let me just say, we're watching two episodes next week.
Yeah.
The second one, I have never heard anything about. The first one, I've heard, is one of the best, if not the best, single episodes of Farscape ever.
That's a lot of hype.
It's a lot of hype, but, you know, a lot of people say it's really good, so we'll see. It's called The Way We Weren't, and it's Season 2, Episode 5. And the description goes like this. A datacam tape shows Aaron as part of a firing squad that executed a previous pilot. The crew wants answers, but Aaron won't revisit her past.
Oof, that sounds dark.
Right, sounds deep. Then we have Picture If You Will, Season 2, Episode 6. Chiana returns to Moya with a fortune-telling portrait. The picture foretells the deaths of each of the crew, and one by one, they start to die off.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my god, this is going to be another weird one.
Yeah, we're getting into a weird zone of Farscape, I feel like.
When you were texting me when you watched the episodes before I did, and you were saying these are insanely weird, I was just really happy, because I've been enjoying Farscape the way it is right now, but I've always heard that it gets weirder in a good way. Not just like weird, like, oh, everyone's upside down, and they're all green, and they have 16 eyes, but weird in the terms of, like, it's very Australian, and it's very, like, blending comedy and seriousness. And I think that's where the show hits its stride, is when it blends that, like, weird plot synopsis with some crazy acting and some good puppet work. I think that those are sort of the three triangles of a good Farscape episode. So, yes. John, did you have fun this week?
I did have fun.
That's good. Thank you again for listening to Scape Chats. And
you're welcome.
This is, in fact, Scape Chats somewhere in the universe.